My ability to walk may have been taken, but my ability to choose has not. And I get to decide how I choose how I'm going to live my life.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Patrick Young is a former professional and University of Florida basketball player. He is currently an ESPN basketball analyst. As a McDonald's All-American, Patrick was touted as one of the top high school recruits in the country. This landed him a scholarship at the University of Florida with then-head coach Billy Donovan. In his four-year career with the Gators, Patrick and his teammates achieved tremendous success, going to three Elite Eights and one Final Four. Individually, he amassed numerous accolades from SEC Defensive Player of the Year to three-time SEC Scholar Athlete to many others. Even more impressive is that he never missed a game during his career at Florida. After playing professionally in the NBA and overseas, he transitioned into broadcasting as a college basketball analyst for the SEC Network. In the summer of 2022, Patrick was involved in a tragic car accident that left him paralyzed from the waist down. His new book, Sit to Rise, Turning Your Darkest Pain into Your Brightest Victory, shares his story and perspective not only from that experience but also from his whole life. Patrick's story is truly an inspiration and encouragement, but even as he has already overcome so much, he still is in the middle of battling to walk again one day, which I believe makes his words even stronger and even more of a reason to listen. On the show, you'll get to hear his perspective and the principles he uses as he works each day to live in the present in the midst of his own challenges. If you want to find out more about Patrick, his book, or having him come speak to your organization, check out patrickyoung.com. This conversation with Patrick really inspired me, and I know it will you as well. I hope you enjoy the show and be encouraged. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Patrick Young. Patrick, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is it's a blessing just to be used by God, and just the doors that open, who knows what's going to come from this. And I'm just going to be as authentic as possible and real, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah, well, I can guarantee anybody that's listening, there's going to be some good stuff. So, but if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to kind of dive into to your story of growing up and what life was like for you.
Man, it's one of those things where, you know, we see, because I have an 11-year-old daughter, and she, it's just such a transition when you think about your childhood to the childhood of today. How old are you?
I'm 31.
Oh, same age. So you grew up pretty much probably the same as I, like outside all the time. We didn't have a lot of technology. It started to really kind of pick up as we were growing up, but we still weren't like fully invested into it like the kids are now. And you know, she can have a friend come over and they'll just be like in their phones or on their iPad, not talking to each other, playing Roblox. And growing up for me, but my parents are still married, here in Jacksonville, Florida. Always a super active kid, have an older sister as well. Super active, man. I mean, like we and my best friends in the neighborhood, we just played outside. We were always together. We commune together, we grew up together, we hurt each other together, we got in trouble together, we had fun together, like, and we didn't even phones. Literally, I think sometimes we would call each other through the house phones. of like, hey, is Malik here? Can you ask him if he wants to come outside? But most of the time we didn't have to do that. You look outside and you see a few guys, and then we hang out, we play football, basketball, baseball. I mean, all types of things to be entertained. And as I grew up, I was the most athletic of the group and really was bought into sports as well as my academics. It's just crazy when I think about it. Like most of the kids that I grew up with in this neighborhood did not have the same opportunities as I did. And what I mean by that, they had to go to the neighborhood school. Highlands Elementary, then Highlands Middle, and then First Coast. And not that they're terrible schools, but they're not schools that open up a gateway for you to go to like a college prep middle school and college prep, high school, like I was affording. So thankful that my mom knew somebody that got me into the San Mateo Elementary, which was a little bit, it's not far from us, but it wasn't the neighborhood school. And my parents and my mom especially, she was always so vigilant and on academics, my dad as well, on us, just to make sure that we understood that a wasted mind is not is or a mind that doesn't take advantage of the opportunities to educate itself is the wasted mind. So I balanced out sports and academics, going to some tough schools, but so thankful for my parents. And gosh, like we grew up in the church pretty much, just going to church, so that foundation was within me. But I wouldn't say it wasn't until I really got to college that I started seeing that my experiential life of my Christianity and my faith was so different than what I grew up around. That there were aspects of the faith that I was like, man, I thought I was a Christian, but my life looks nothing like that in comparison to some people that ended up mentoring me. And I just wish in life, like the only few things I regret in life, growing up, is that humility. I wish I would have been a little more humble, a lot more humble, as far as being able to realize, hey, I don't have all the answers, and I need to lean on people that love me and want what's best for me, because they see things and know things that I haven't experienced. Wish I would have been a little bit more competitive, but I think with competition, it's kind of something that's almost innately born, like you're born with, like just wanting to win all the time. And I think because I was usually in the neighborhood the best athlete, I kind of didn't like being the best athlete. Like I kind of wanted to fit in because there wasn't that much competition around me. And then also, with identity, really wish I could have just taken my time with figuring out who I was, what I wanted to be, and then living by those principles and understanding like what's so important in life is us on this path of becoming the versions of ourselves that we were created to be, instead of trying to compare ourselves or fit in or mold ourselves to what society thinks that we're supposed to be. That was something I struggle with. People pleaser, want to be liked, want to fit in. And it wasn't until obviously we get older where we start kind of caring less, about what other people think about us. And then you realize, you know what? The right people are going to come into my life. And I'd rather it be the right people that know me as me and love me as me versus people that love me as this facade of who I'm trying to put up. So I hope that's a good intro for. And I guess I'll touch a little bit on my basketball career, give some more context there. 4 years at the University of Florida under Billy Donovan. We went to a Final Four in 2014, my last season. Went on to play some professional basketball overseas, played 6 years, went to Turkey first. That was crazy. I was in the NBA for a little bit. Then went overseas to Turkey, was in Greece for 2 years and Italy for a few years. And injuries kind of plagued my career, and I pretty much hung it up at age 28, 28, 29. Came back home trying to figure out what was next, and got open some doors that got me working with the SEC Network. Something I always dreamt of. I had a degree in telecommunications. Of course, I didn't think I'd be getting into it until like I was 35, 36. I was thinking,
Sure.
but it happened the way it was supposed to. Met the love, I mean, and reconnected with the love of my life, my wife, Whitney. And yeah, it was great coming back home, and but still trying to figure out my identity of who I am outside of basketball, even though we kind of innately know those things. It's when you have to actually put it to the test, or put it to like you have to live it out, where you're like, dang, is this who I really want to be? Is like, what is life going to look like now? So yeah, here we are.
Yeah, well, like you touched on, there's a lot of really good things in that story, and just the upbringing of having your parents. You said they're still married to this day. What are some things
Yeah.
you learned from them within maybe their marriage, in your opinion, that have really impacted you?
Good and bad for sure. I see that, it's a lot of work. to hold on to things that this long. And you know, I don't have the experience, obviously, of being married for 30 plus years, but in my short amount of time that I've had, pride, it says that one of our marriage verses was, where there's strife, there's pride. When there's issues and things going on, there's some type of pride issue that's rearing its head into an issue. And sometimes pride can make us think that we want to be right and win versus over an issue, over it's me and her versus this issue. Because when it's that way versus this issue is happening, and it's me versus her versus me and her versus the issue, there's a disconnect in harmony and unity, and just that fight to be right or that fight to be loved. Like, you can stay married or you can fight to be right, you know, one of the things. And I just see, you know, my parents are imperfect people. They both have changed over time and continue to strive to love each other through the changes that, I mean, we all over time, every 10 years, 5, 10 years, we're going to be different people. We're still going to be us, but there's things and perspectives that we learn in our lives and go through. That, I mean, I've also just seen how different my parents are as well, which is okay. I think so many times you get caught up with the a need for married couples to be so similar. And I mean, I think what I've seen mostly is the foundational things within them are what have kept them together, because they're different. They personalities are different. So many things that where there's disconnects, but because foundationally they're in the same place, they can, quote unquote, they can put up with each other. They can love each other through the messes, through the thing, the disconnects. And they've been very forgiving, and just they let go. What I've learned, you know, they let go, and we shed off a lot of petty stuff in their relationship, which is really good. A lot of people hold on to stuff for so long, and it builds up, it boils over, and it really ends up exploding and causing big issues. But they've done a good job of modeling that for me, and I'm grateful for it.
Absolutely. You talked about foundation, but also too, earlier you talked about humility. So opposite of pride, being prideful is being humble. And so having that model, you got to have a little bit of that to make a marriage work. So that's awesome to hear that. Well, kind of going in before we dive into some other stuff, but going into your career, you're a great high school player. Obviously, you grew up being outside playing sports. How did you ultimately end up at the University of Florida? And maybe talk about a little bit of the experiences that you had there, because if I read it correct, I think you went to 3 Elite 8s and then one Final Four in your entire time. That's pretty good time playing. So
There's a lot of NBA players that never even made the tournament. You know, look at Ben Simmons. He went to LSU, then never made the tournament. But no, I don't know if you can see this picture of this man on the back of my phone. That's my grandfather. He actually just passed away
Sorry.
2 Saturdays ago, and
Oh, I'm sorry.
he's the reason that, first off, that I'm a before being a quote unquote Gator great, I was a Gator fan because of them going to tailgates. They were Jaguar season ticket holders from the beginning. Jaguar started in 95, and Gator season ticket holders for a long time. So we would sometimes double dip, go down to Gainesville, tailgate, and then come up to back home to Jacksonville and tailgate for those games as well. So diehard Gators and Jags fan right now. We're kind of hurting, trying to figure out what's going on with the Jags, man. Hopefully, when this podcast airs, there'll be a win in the column against Tampa Bay coming up here. But you know, I really wasn't the most talented when it came to basketball, believe it or not. Baseball was my number one sport for a long time. Since growing up, baseball just, I was a really good hitter, really good pitcher. And I kind of lost my love for it because of some coaching things that ended up happening in my AAU career, and some teammates that just weren't as welcoming. And I couldn't articulate that at the age of 12, 13. Basketball was just something else I did. Yeah, there's so many multi-sport athletes. It wasn't really until 8th grade, 9th grade, that I made this huge growth spurt from like 6 foot to 6'5" to 6'7" to 6'9". And I wasn't coordinated. at that time, I wasn't very, all that length that you get and lankiness, and not growing into your body, that was definitely me. So then it was my going into my sophomore year was where I started figuring things out, exploding. My recruitment exploded. I mean, going from nothing to nationwide almost. And Coach Donovan was coming off the heels of two national championships when I was in high school, sending Joakim Noah, Al Horford, Chris Richards, those guys to the NBA. He came to visit me a few times. It's funny. He came to visit me a few times. I was in chorus at Paxson school here, and he came a few times to visit right when I was in chorus. And I'm like, Coach, why did you have to come right now? He came like an hour earlier, an hour late. Why you got to come when I'm? Fortunately, there's no story of him making me getting me to sing or something like that. There's nothing like that. But that was something I was, and it was easy decision for me to, my family, so they're close by. I mean, what a blessing. They got to come to every home game, being a part of some greatness and seeing their son, develop and the team that we had. It was incredible, man. So there were other schools, but, I try not to even think about those times because it was pretty clear in my recruitment that I wanted to be a Gator.
Absolutely. Well, going into that a little bit, obviously you're part of some great teams. What were some of the things you learned, maybe from the leadership, from the coaches, but also from your teammates and your peers, and what it means to have a good team and have a good environment and culture?
Man, that's a we can make the whole episode about
I
that.
know, yeah.
Well, I guess at first I'll start with within myself. That's where I go back to that piece from the beginning, talking about humility and being a better listener, being more coachable. Like I wish if I could go back from day one, I would have said, Coach Donovan, I want you to coach me hard. I want you to help me become the best player that I and he did. But I got in my own way a lot of most of the time my freshman year with my attitude and disposition and not being able to handle adversity very well. And that's the thing about practices so practice for people that listen, practice is not just where you strive to only prepare yourself for the game and get practice is where coaches create an environment of adversity to see how you respond to help you build your mental toughness. It is not just the frou-frou, oh yeah, I just got practice today. It's gonna like no, like we're going to compete. We're gonna compete. We're gonna not call fouls. We're going to strive to get you frustrated to get you to move on to the next play. And yeah, I struggle with that a bit. And but I'm so grateful that not only was Coach Donovan extremely as a leader of the team of the organization, he was patient. He was someone that definitely held you accountable. But when it came to resolution of whatever issue was, attitude, this, that effort, forgive and forget, Coach Donovan. Forgive the thing and we move on. We move on because we have, there was an understanding that, we got 500 hours a season to practice and let's not waste it by lingering on some mistakes or some shortcomings. Then from the team aspect, gosh, I mean, I'll look at a guy like Casey Prather, one of my teammates. He struggled so much his first 3 years, and he wanted to prove to the team, to himself, that he was a shooter and that he could play a certain role in a certain way that was outside of his strengths. And when he finally grasped who he was supposed to be, what he was great at, what he was Coach Donovan recruited him to come to the school for, oh my gosh. Like, I just don't know if you're going to get stories like that anymore because he was pretty much an All-American at Florida his last year. If you're going to get stories like that now because of the transfer portal, how many guys are going to stick around for 3 years before they can figure it out and they explode and turn into a player like he did? And then I would say the biggest part of what I learned when it came to be a successful team was the way that we loved each other. People might think that's corny, but I'm serious. Yeah. We had four guys that stayed together all every year, and Coach Donovan had us working with a sports psychologist that made us talk about things that we weren't, made us become vulnerable. And what I loved about that was that the coaches started first. They didn't just have the players sharing some tough stuff about their lives. You know, Coach Donovan shared about his miscarriage that him and his wife went through, and some other things. Like, it's known. It's not like a private thing. Like, it's known they've gone through and had that years and years ago. But it opened the door. So, you know, the word brotherhood and family are used a lot in sports, but like, how well do you really know the guy next to you? And when you can really know that guy next to you that, hey, this guy's father hasn't been in his life, this his entire life, like he needs some loving, or this thing happened with this guy's mom, or this thing. And it really brought us together so much closer. And on the court, not only in life, but on the court, I mean, it translated to, I'm really trying to do the right things around my teammates because I don't want to disappoint them. And I want these guys to know I love them by the way I play. And that caused that. That's where when you talk about sacrificing for the greater good, no, nobody on my team was caught up in trying to score points. We just wanted to win. We just wanted to do something that hadn't been done before, which was going 18-0 in the SEC regular season and then winning the SEC tournament. That was freaking awesome. So we pretty much went 21-0 in our conference.
Which is incredibly challenging to do. But I think your point, too, about just kind of buying into the role on the team, like you talked about your teammate, Casey Prater, being able to do that and then excel in that and then having everyone – kind of built around the idea of loving each other in the way, not just the way that you play, but intentionally getting to take some time to get to know them and to get to know where they're from, their background, and the things that maybe the challenges and the highs and the lows that they go through each day.
But just think about it. It's something that can be so overlooked nowadays and hard to cultivate or create because the transfer portal and getting – whether it's bringing in, it's a new team every year. Guys staying in, guys coming out, like it's a multitude. I was listening to some guys that like some of the guys in the transfer portal, they've been humbled by realizing I'm not good enough to play or whatever. And it's a personal interest thing because I think it's right. It's right for these players to put themselves first because your college career is short and you don't look back and have regrets, but also there's the thing of staying to develop relationships about your degree. I mean, not every, and that's the thing too. Somebody mentioned like every credit is not going to transfer over if you can transfer, you know, two and three times. So that's going to be something that can affect players. But the relationships and love that you can develop come over time. And if you're in and out of places every year or so, it's going to be a lot harder for coaches too. But the good thing is with college basketball and college sports, they've allowed teams to practice and get together a little bit earlier. So hopefully that helps, but it's super important, man. Like I can't stress it enough. Like you can, there are multiple ways to skin a cat. Like you can have a dictatorship type coach that, you know, everything like it can work, but at the end of the day, like those players are not ever going to want to come back to the school and spend time with the players that because they're going to think like the coach hated me the whole time, even though we won, who cares about it? And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I could have made it through a system like that. I would have probably transferred in a system like that.
Yeah. But at the same time, what you talked about, use the word adversity, creating environments and practice to where you have to overcome some failure, some challenges. It just makes you stronger. I mean, it's not something that we enjoy going through in the moment.
No one enjoys going through in the moment.
Yeah. But looking back and having some perspective, it's kind of humbling because you look back and you're like, wow, I'm actually glad some of those things, I wouldn't have chosen them to happen, but I'm able to look forward and grow from that and be strengthened by it.
Well, transitioning into from that, you know, I look at it for those listening, you know, I was in a car accident in June 29th of 2022. And I can't say, I won't say yet, you know, I think I will get to the point one day of, this is the greatest thing that's happened to me in my life. You know, David Pollack, I hope you can get him on the show one day. He's fantastic. He was a big time Georgia linebacker drafted in the first round. And I think his first or second year season, he broke his neck and ended up he couldn't play football anymore after that. He's not a paraplegic or anything like that, but he couldn't play football. And he said it's the greatest thing that ever happened to him. Changed his life, changed his perspective, changed what was important, the priorities, and the thing, the doors that were opened for him by God doing what God did in his life, allowing it to happen. And I look at my life back from, and don't get me wrong, there were a lot of times where it was really hard and figuring out what I'm going to do and how I'm going to lead myself and how I'm going to trust in that this wasn't a mistake, with my car accident and leaving me as a paraplegic. But the things that have come from it, the golf tournament, the foundation, raising money to help other people, the blinders that have been taken off my eyes to, my foundation is to help helping those that have spinal cord injuries and other life-changing things and providing resources and filling in the gaps where insurance won't or can't. And I had no idea about how, until I've gone through it, went through it myself, how bad and crazy and sad that this space can be. There's a huge level of defeatism when you have a life-altering, life-changing event that happens in your life and you don't know and can lose hope that life will ever be normal again. So I am just so grateful that I've been provided this platform to, and it's like I'm still in the middle of some things that aren't ideal that I don't want to be going through, of course. Like I'm not on the other side of saying like, yeah, after 5 years I was able to walk again, and of course that's what I'm praying for, but also understanding that hey, I'm going to live my life daily to the fullest. Hopefully, not being perfect. There's the word perfect. Get that out of there. Get that out of the thought process. But by me just showing up and living and being present and being grateful, it's going to touch other people's lives because they're going to see, oh man, that Patrick, he went through that and yet he's still smiling. He's still living outside of himself. He's still trying to serve other people. He's using this platform to go on podcasts and to share things like this to try and encourage others. Maybe my situation isn't so bad. So it's been pretty humbling again, just being used in this platform and just to know that, hey man, it was a mess, chaos that happened, but there is purpose and meaning coming from behind all of it.
Yeah, well, and if you wouldn't mind just kind of diving back into that, maybe share a little of that story of how that came about, because for people to have some context, you said obviously you had a great career at Florida, you go on to play professionally, and then you come back, you start working for the SEC Network. So you're kind of stepping into a new chapter of life. There's a lot of good things going on in your life. You're about to get married, and then all of a sudden in this moment, something happens and changes the course a little bit. But if you wouldn't mind just kind of sharing about your story and the accident that happened and kind of the what's happened from that.
Yeah, so I was basketball season was over after this was would be after my first year with SEC, and I was already engaged to my wife at that time, and she lived up in Nebraska. We met at the University of Florida. For those of that wondering,
Go
what's
Gators.
Nebraska got to do with this story? So we met at the University of Florida, and it was a story 11 years in the making or 10 years in the making that we actually got married. We weren't dating all that time. We were friends and. Friends and just stayed in touch here and there. We actually didn't talk to each other for 3 years, which is pretty crazy after 2018, 3 years of no contact. But anyways, we were she has a daughter, my daughter Kyla, and I just always felt so guilty when she would come down to Jacksonville, because she'd be leaving her daughter, like they're best friends, so she'd be leaving her and stay down there with me for some time. So season was over. I had another job where I'm working completely remotely. So I was like, you know what? Let me go spend some time up in Nebraska with her and her family. Because once we get married and like we're moving to Jacksonville, like we're not staying up in Nebraska. And actually, I would have considered it if they lived closer to the airport to actually, but they're 3 hours from the airport, the city of O'Neill, Nebraska. So while I was there, I was spending months at a time with her and her family, her mom, Whitney, daughter, grandparents. And after a while, I just got kind of bored up there. And it wasn't because of them. It was because they go to work and I'd be at home, just the dog and myself until they got back. Because my job wasn't very demanding. And it was snowing and it was freezing. So I wasn't, and they live right on a golf course. I wasn't playing golf at the time. So fortunately, a buddy of mine at Whitney's church offered me, said, "Hey man, if you need something to do, you can come work with this irrigation company and put some money in your pocket on the side and just, yeah, I mean, you go out there and work on these huge pivot machines that are on farmers' lands, and it'd be hard work, but at the end of the day, you're done by 4 o'clock. You'd feel so accomplished, like you really did something impactful, and I enjoyed it. I knew it was just going to be a short term thing, but I would have never suspected that that opportunity would have changed my life. On June 29th, routine day that we were getting some stuff done, I was driving back from location to the site where we needed to pick something up and just lost control of my vehicle. So grateful that there was no, and not a busy road, old dirt road, but there I didn't have my seatbelt on. It was just kind of one of those things where I was an old beat up truck. Oh, I'm going 2 miles up the road. Like you're not even thinking about something bad that could happen. And it literally 2 miles up the road is as far as we were going. But I didn't know the road. I wasn't paying great attention in the moment, and the car flipped over as I was crossing the highway, and ended up feeling a pop in my back, and immediately couldn't feel my legs, couldn't move. I mean, I was in a great deal of pain. I was in a good deal of pain at that moment, but just so thankful that my buddy, I was able to grab my phone and call my buddy that I was working with. He was in another truck behind me. He didn't see the accident though, which is the scary thing. If I wasn't able to grab my phone, it's possible I could have been down there for a long time. So we got help. I was life flighted to South Dakota, where I had to get surgery. It's like an 8-hour procedure or something like that, where they had to put two rods and 12 screws in my back to align my spinal cord back. And I mean, just to go from there, it was crazy. Making the phone call to Whitney and my mom and telling, get on the next flight to come to South Dakota to help, because I didn't, I was scared, I was terrified, fearful, all the things, all of the above. And didn't know what the future looked like, but I'm just so grateful that I had people that showed up for me in that time.
Well, I've heard you touch on in that moment of being at the hospital, you talked about this sense of peace that you had, which, hearing that story, thinking about all the things that go into that, that's probably not obviously someone's first initial thought of what you would be thinking. But, how did maybe your faith growing up and the faith that you had in this challenging time come and have that sense of peace with God in that moment?
Well, the moment where I felt the most peace was actually when I was getting life-flighted from the crash site to the hospital. And it's what I always tell people. I didn't have any more clarity. I didn't know anything at that moment. There was no more answers. There was nothing that happened other than me flying in a helicopter. But in that moment in time, I was there. I felt the peace of God over me, that just saying like everything's going to be okay. Like it might be tough, it might be hard, but ultimately everything is going to be okay. And I didn't exactly know what that meant. But looking back to where I am now, I'm like, okay, it's not too bad. But that peace that I felt, that went above my understanding of the situation, was something I had never experienced before. And I knew the scripture in Philippians that talks about the peace that surpasses your understanding, but I truly hadn't experienced that until that moment. And I just thought, with my wife, as we're talking about all the and thinking about what this means for our life going forward, we just asked ourselves, like, hey man, like, or hey wife Whitney, what are we going to title this seat? Like, do we believe that God is who he says he is? That God is what's true, what he says about us is true, what he wants for our lives, that this was not a mistake, that God's not caught off guard on what to do with our lives, that this is not a tragedy, unless we can make it a tragedy if we want to. But also we can, looking back from now, 5 years from now, we're not going to still be living in this victimhood mindset. That's not who we're going to be. And we leaned on each other because this was truly really difficult for her as well. You know, her dream of getting married and, you know, having the perfect honeymoon and all that stuff was kind of taken away. Not kind of, it was, and taken away for me as well. But we decided that our marriage is going to be far more than just a wedding date and a honeymoon, that we're going to be able to truly live life in a way that's going to be so honoring to our daughter, to God, to our each other. And like this definitely grew our challenged the heck out of our faith. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, as you touched on that, you talked about the adversity and the decision that you made, the choice that you made to move forward and not be a victim of the situation. And I think there was a quote that I heard you talk about, maybe when you were going through maybe the surgery after you came out, whatever it was, you had got some advice from one of the nurses about
Oh,
watering the
yeah.
positive seed. If you
Yeah.
wouldn't mind, maybe share that a little bit because I think that's a profound message too, and
Yeah.
it goes
Yeah.
right into not having a victim mentality and choosing to
Yeah.
get back
No,
on track.
it was really good. I was in South Dakota still, and the case manager was trying to help coordinate us getting to a better hospital, a hospital that's geared for spinal cord injuries and teaching you and training you and rehabbing you and all those things. And she was like, you know, she probably was only up for that floor. I would think so. Maybe. I don't know how hospitals work.
Okay.
But she was just like, I've been doing this job for 20 plus years, and I've seen all types of people that come in that have traumatic, life-changing things, like what I had experienced. And she said, I've seen one of two people go one of two ways. Like, for one, like your families grow closer together, or they go further apart from tragedy, from something like this happening. And hopefully, you know, I think my family and I, we've gotten closer through this, that we've, and I'm so grateful. Both my parents are retired. So it, if they weren't retired, this whole situation, and my mom's a retired nurse at that. So, things would have been a lot different. But she said, I've noticed that the way that people live their lives, when you're born, she said, it's hard for me to remember exactly how she said it, but it's like, we're born with a seed of positivity and negativity, and it is up to us through which lens we want to live, which plant we're going to be watering through our lives. Like it can literally be traffic, from something as small as traffic to something as big as a spinal cord injury. But she said the one that you water the most is the one that's going to blossom when something traumatic does truly happen in your life. And the one, it's like how you live your life is how it's how you're going to show up in moments where you don't have all the answers. And because fortunately, you know, I give credit to my mom and dad helping me just live life in this positive lens through whatever hardship, and through the Holy Spirit as well. I mean, bigger, more than anything, just giving me the faith and hope to believe that things are going to be better. Things are going to work out. This is not the end, that I was able to just reframe my mind from this tragedy to being like, you know what? My ability to walk may have been taken, but my ability to choose has not. And I get to decide how I choose how I'm going to live my life. And because I was able to do that, I just, you know, you make a decision. You make a decision, you know, even if I don't walk again, even if things don't happen in the timeline, or if I do walk again and it's not in the timeline, like I'm still going to live my life in the fullest. It's not a mindset of what if this doesn't happen? What if? We have no idea. Like we don't have, it's an illusion that we live in with the control that we have in our lives, that we have more than we actually do. And, but what we can control is our choices. And I was like, I'm choosing to live my life the way I want it to be, regardless of the circumstances. And I'm going to do it with a smile on my face, because nobody wants to be around someone that's a pity party all the time. And even as justified as it may be, it's like, I'm not going to be a victim. You know, 5 years, 10 years from now, I want people to say, oh man, I aspire to be someone like Patrick Young. And this is not based off of my merits, but aspiring, because we all, it's guaranteed that we're going to face hardships and adversity, big and small, in our lives. But the way that we respond, I hope that can be something that people look at. Like, Patrick responded in a way that I want to respond to adversity.
Absolutely. And I think people that are watching you or have heard or read your book, you're doing that every single day. And it's encouraging. And that's why there's so many opportunities that you have to impact so many people because of how you're responding to what you're doing. And you know, I'm not putting your words in your mouth. I know, I'm sure it's not easy. One of my close friends lost his leg in a grain auger accident out in Oklahoma. And so I'd love to hear your perspective because I talked to him through it. But what was it like? So after kind of all the dust has settled and now it's time to you have to actually go day to day. What has that been like for you? And just talk a little bit about that experience and the mindset that you have each and every day after everything's kind of settled and you're working in day to
Well, what
day.
was huge, you know, once things kind of settled, the dust settled in, we kind of got, you know, I'm getting out of Colorado where I was at Craig Hospital, the spinal cord hospital. It's like, all right, man, like my mindset, and I mentioned this in the book, I'm so grateful that I was an athlete because my mindset of getting after it and working through it and getting better and thinking that, hey, faith without works is dead, that I have the faith to believe, but I can't just sit on my hands hoping that it's going to happen. Like, to prove to God, to prove to myself that this is what I want, I got to work. You know, if I want to become this thing, I can't just and achieve. Like, even like with the law of attraction, like, I do believe that the law of attraction is something that can be biblical, is biblical the way you perceive it. You focus your mind on something and reframe your life around it. You're not going to say it's guaranteed to happen, but you give yourself the best chance for those things to happen. And if to have any control, if there is any control in the situation, it's like I'm not going to leave any stone unturned saying, like, oh man, I wish I would have worked a little bit harder. I wish I would have pushed myself some more. In those hard days, I wish I would have talked to somebody about some struggles I'm dealing with. But because some days it's a little bit easier to, and then some days it's tough. It's tough to get out of bed and get myself going. But it's like my struggles and battles, they might be a little bit different. They're different, but they're the same things that everybody else deals with. Doubt, fear, anxiety, dealing with trust issues when it comes to a certain scenario in your life, they might be amplified a little bit more for me just because physically my life is different than what I'm used to. But what I love about this situation is that it's forced me to realize how small I am and how weak I am. And I don't mean that in a You know, people will take that whichever way, but I don't mean that in a way that I'm less than. I mean that in a way of reality, that we are fragile human beings, that one phone call, one whatever can change our lives dramatically. So it just put me in a position where we always should be, all of us should be like trusting God and depending on Him for what our lives are going to be and hold. Because before, you know, just being this 6'9", 260-pound muscular athlete, 5% body fat, you know, could jump out of the gym and do all the like those things are great, but that was gonna at some point in my life go away anyway. Like I can't do those athletic things forever. So it's like, how strong are you mentally? How strong are you emotionally? How strong are you spiritually? And those areas. You know, this year I was in the hospital for battling an infection, and I will have to say that this year was far worse than the initial accident, as far as difficulty of motion, of mentality, getting through it. And I just remember my hardest day was me crying out to God, saying, "Lord, I need you. I need help. I need desperately need you to help me through this, to help me." Have the strength because I see it. I'm weak. And a pastor I really like, he talks about weakness in like God. I say God wants us to be weak, but God wants us to be in a place where our weakness points us to Him constantly, constantly. And that is the place that I've come to and realizing that, hey, like I struggle with being kind. I struggle with being patient. I struggle with being consistent. And these are things, and when I think about it, like God's never struggled with any of those things. So why am I relying on myself and trying to use my willpower to be? They always say, you know, you ask God to be more patient, he's going to test you right away. And I just, gosh, there's just so much that I learned in self-awareness and vulnerability through that time that it helped me just to, like I said, with David Pollack, to grow in ways that I had not. It was like one of my favorite authors, Jason Wilson, and mentors, he says this, that a lot of men are caught up in emotional incarceration. Like they are emotionally just tied, not able to get to express themselves, like to get out of this place where they're able to, yeah, just to free themselves from the emotions, and anger is the way that it usually shows up. Anger or isolation, it can be, you know, one of my favorite commercials was is a BetterHelp commercial, and this guy's bench pressing, and he's got like, I don't know, 300 pounds, and he's just laying, he can't push it up, and he's just like, and his buddy's like, do you need help? It's like, nah, I got it. It's like, I think you need, nah, man, I'm just gonna wait it out, and I'll be fine, I'll be able to get this thing through my, and then you know, my sister said to me when I was in the hospital, she's like, dude, you don't have to be Superman. This is hard, what you're going through. Like, allow yourself to feel what you feel, to be sad today, to be angry today, be whatever it is. Allow yourself that. And but it was so tough. It was like, you know, we go to the gym, we work out for an hour or two, we get it done, then we go about the rest of our day. It felt like I was in mental, emotional, spiritual incarceration that whole time. It's like, can I get a break out of the gym, please? Can I get a little, a few days off from working out? I'm done. I got it. And I didn't get afforded that until I got out. And I'm so grateful. I got out of the hospital October. I was there from May 30th to October 4th.
And but I think that the picture you just touched on of being able to, you're trying to bench and there's help over there, but we choose to do it ourselves. And then also, that's great advice from your sister too, of being able just to have that perspective. And I know throughout your career, you've touched on it a little bit in your book as well. There's been some injuries that you've had to work through. So there's been adversity that you've had. But all of those things have made you stronger to the point when you're in these situations, you're choosing to have that mentality that I love it. And there was a journal entry that I had read in your book that for some reason this one three word sentence really stuck out to me, and life is now. And I think that's really profound in the simplicity of it, but life is now. We don't know if we have tomorrow. What's in the past, but what we do have is in the present. And it goes exactly into what you just shared. And maybe talk about the power of that sentence,
Of
but
that
also,
mindset.
yeah, and the mindset.
Yeah. Well, with that, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with people having 1 year goals, 5 year plans, and 10 year plans, you know, but I don't think those things should ever be rooted in a thought process. I'll be happy when blank happens. I'll really start living when that happens. When, 'cause like, what if it never happens? What if? So are you saying all that time in between that you're waiting, and that it was a failure, that it was that, or that wasted time, I should say, of your life? And it's like the most important place to be is present and where your feet are. FOMO, social media has hurt us in so many ways, and I think FOMO is one of them, fear of missing out on whatever it may be that's going on over there, that's going on in their lives. Comparison is the thief of joy. It takes you away from being able to enjoy where you are. Like literally, like I'm living with my parents right now as I'm healing up, and it's like, oh man, sometimes I can't wait till I'm on my own, blah blah blah, because it's just, you know, your parents just do things differently than you do, and then they, you just operate differently as adults, and you know, I'm gonna miss this time. Like I look back. And I know this is just my personal experience, because I know during that time, during the pandemic, I know everybody's experience was different. But I look back and I kind of miss. I was back here living with my parents then. I was being so present. We were really getting a chance to just live life together. Because I didn't know what to do at that point in time. I was in Gainesville for 2 months training, and then everything got shut down. I'm like, I guess I'm gonna go home to my parents and see what happens. So 4 months later, during that time in the pandemic, I'm like, man, I really enjoyed the time I got to spend here with my parents. My dad and I, we were in the driveway doing dribbling workouts and shooting stuff, and it was great. It was crazy cool. It was crazy cool. And I look back with that to say, enjoy where you are. We happiness is something that's circumstantial, but it's not guaranteed to any of us. We don't know what we don't we can't we live in such this deserved mindset here in America, and it's like, what do we really deserve? What are we really entitled to? Are we seeking the best relationships we have with the people around us? Are they authentic? Do the people really know us, or do they just have their hands out, taking from us? So, yeah, there's so much to that. Life is now. Are we making the most of each day? I don't know. Some, and again, another thing that's not perfect. I fall short of it, many a times, but I have the awareness now. There with my recovery, I know there is a date that I'm going to be healthy and independent and not be normalcy there. But like, I don't know exactly when that date is. So as of now, let's just go literally, cliche as it is, I'm literally going 1 day at a time. And that's fine. I'm good with that.
Yeah, but I think there's so much power in that sentence, but also in the questions you just ask to ask yourself and to be present, be where your feet are. So I love that. Man,
Yeah.
wish we had more time, but I kind of want to wind down, just make sure we on your time and get out of here. But a few questions before we end. I'd love to hear your opinion on what it means to be a good husband and father.
Oh man, it first off, it means dying to self. You got to die to yourself. Most men don't jump in and have a wife and child at the same time when they get married. And I think for me, it magnified how much pride I have. And a good like one of my favorite scriptures, let's see if I got it, is in Romans. I have a card of it that I try to look at. It's in Rome, the book of Romans, but it talks about living in harmony with everyone. And I'm just like, when I sometimes before I would enter the house after work or physical therapy or whatever, before I would go in the house, I say, what am I bringing inside the house right now? See, am I bringing peace? Am I bringing love? Am I bringing, like, I don't want to come in the house and the first thing I'm doing is telling my daughter what to do, telling her, hey, you need to go do this. You need to go do, like, let me love up on these girls and bring some excitement and joy. Like, I want my wife and I always be perfect, but what can I bring into the house to keep that harmony and unity? And gosh, the biggest thing I learned with being married is that you have to communicate. You have to almost sometimes be preemptive in your communication as well, that my wife and we're doing more of it, but on Sundays we would have a check-in with each other. We use this thing called a feelings wheel, and we check in and say, hey, was there anything I did this week that rubbed you the wrong way? How are you feeling? What can I do better, et cetera. The more you do it, like, it was kind of tough at first because nobody likes getting criticism. But the more we did it, we didn't really, it's not charisma, it's support. It's pretty much saying, hey, this is how you can be better for me this week. This is how I can be, or how can I be better for you this week, this upcoming week. And it was so good. It helped us just to stay so connected. And then also, like, the last part, stay playful. Stay like, it all doesn't have to be so serious. Stay playful. Play with, joke around with your wife, joke around with your daughter, tickle them, laugh with them, play games. Like, that stuff matters. It really does.
Yeah, key is just keep it simple and have fun. I mean, being
Yeah.
playful and then also having that intentionality. And the more you do that stuff, the more it just becomes natural to do it.
Exactly.
So.
It becomes natural. There's no fear in, oh man, she's really going to get on me today.
Yeah.
And then, sometimes she might, but,
Yeah.
But you don't you end up not taking it personally. It's because you know the heart behind what she's saying is because maybe I hurt her. Maybe I said or did something that I wasn't aware of, or maybe I am aware of where it messed up. But now we have to really sit down and chat about it.
Yeah, and the key is just to get better, right? Get better
That's
each and
it.
every day. So,
That's it. Just like an athlete, you know, 1% every day.
1% better. Well, the final question I have for you, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you?
Building excellence is, I think it has vision. First off, you got to have vision to saying who you want to be and where you're going. And in order to build that, you have to have a vision of where you're going. And then everything that you do after that, you ask yourself, am I building or am I building blocks? Are they putting me closer to where I want to be, or are they keeping me where I am, moving me further away? So if I had to think about building excellence, because again, excellence is not perfection. It is not doing things, but it is having discipline and awareness of where you want to be, who the people are around you. Are they helping you towards that direction or holding you back? Because your friends and your community is a huge part in achieving your goals and vision for your life. So I love it. Like ex a lot of people think excellence has to deal with doing the right thing, the perfect thing every single time. I don't think that's the case. I think the small, profound, consistent, or it's simple, not profound, simple, the small, simple things consistently help you to build excellence and build that muscle where you have a standard. And when people know that, you just don't know how contagious and impactful it can be. Because I think people that are living their lives to the fullest of who they've been called to be, that's excellence. That's impactful. It's rare to see that nowadays because we're so caught up in comparison and being like this or that, or but when you can do those things, I think you have a really good shot of being excellent.
That's well said. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for coming on, for sharing your story, the lessons that you've learned, the adversity you face, and the encouragement that you give to so many people. You have a new book out, Sit to Rise. If
Rise.
people wanted to find out more about you and maybe even listen to you talk about your story, have you come speak, like what are the best things to find out more about you?
I have a website. It's in the book. I think it's in the QR code in the book, but it's, my name is Patrick without the letter K. So it's patrickyoung.com. Again, without the letter K. It's funny how many times I tell people sometimes and they still are just like, whatever, it is what it is. Why did my mom make my life more difficult?
Adds a little trickiness to it, so
Yeah. But
yeah.
go onto the website. You can put in the inquiry if you want to learn more and potentially do a speaking thing. And then you'll have social media, Patrick Young, the number four. Those things work as well.
Yeah, well, we'll link all those in the show notes. But Patrick, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're a testament to what it's like to really go out and live the things day to day and overcome adversity, and just a great encouragement to so many people. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is great. I needed this.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.